Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Tuesday, June 21st. My pleasure to be with you. Hope you slept well. I did, just not enough, as is typically the case, but that's all right. We're all playing hurt this time of year, and I'm with you. I did have a good, nice piece of watermelon this morning. That's still my wife the other day. One of my favorite things about this time of year, summer foods. Watermelon, sweet corn, and when it's time, homegrown tomatoes. That's what I'm looking forward to. Anyway, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. If you want to be on the program today, you can call or text that number. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your thoughts on Facebook or on Twitter, Mike Allen Show, the handle. We'll give you the question of the day in the next segment. We're going to talk about a number of things today. No official guests, so all the more reason to call. We're going to talk a little bit about life's little foxes and something that the saints, really throughout the ages, a particular verse from the Old Testament that had their attention, that they commented on, and something I'm becoming increasingly aware of the longer I try to live my life as a Catholic Christian. You would think practice makes perfect, but that's not always the case. Sometimes it's only perfect practice makes perfect, but I digress. American parents and the happiness gap, that'll actually drive our question of the day in the next segment, where Father Z lost me. Father Z, who's a well-known Catholic priest, blogger, particularly a favorite, I think, among those who are concerned about liberalism in the church. Father Z, there are many times I'm sympathetic to what he writes, but not this time, and I'll explain a little bit later. While the Orthodox are sort of proving a point as they gather in Crete for their pan-Orthodox council, but it ain't as pan as they were hoping it would be. Anyway, some questions about Steph Curry and why Pope Francis critics might want to make up their minds. All that and more on the program today. As I said, I'll give you the question of the day in the next segment. Anyway, we're still on. We're on day 7, I think it is now, of No Mouse Caught in a Trap. It's been a few days since I've seen a mouse. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. And maybe that means our cats are doing their job. But I guess the only thing that about not finding a mouse and the cats doing their job, I don't want to find like a half-eaten cat, a mouse carcass, not cat carcass. That means we got a much bigger mouse than we anticipated. A half-eaten mouse carcass somewhere in the house, given with our cats. We have one cat, our only outside cat, who likes to leave little gifts like half-eaten baby bunnies on our front porch. So hopefully that won't be the case. Again, I'll keep you posted because I know you're on pins and needles. A little bit later this morning, I'm going to have the privilege of participating in a graveside service for actually a former member of the Methodist Church where I was pastor before I became Catholic. I would ask for you to remember in prayer the soul of Lina Click was her name, 96 years old, so had lived a very full life, had been widowed for over 20 years, was an organist at the church. Actually, she had retired before I got there, but she still attended. She still played the piano sometimes. Sweet, sweet woman. I hadn't seen her for a number of years, but the family asked me to have a share in her quiet graveside service today. She will be laid to rest. And given the fact that a corporal work of mercy is burying the dead, I figure anything I can do for this family and for her is I'll be privileged to do and to be a part of it. And I had a good meeting yesterday with her adult daughter. It's funny, you know, well, not funny. I walked into the meeting and it had been years since I'd seen this adult daughter. And she saw me and she said, oh, she said, I remembered you as a young man. I was like, oh, ouch. remove that arrow. Yeah, I'm not used to this. Well, why is it since I hit 50, I'm having these sorts of experiences a lot? I'm used to the guy that's, you know, red hair and freckles, a boyish Opie Taylor, you know, Richie Cunningham. Not used to this new role. mortality. It happens to all of us, doesn't it? Anyway, today is the feast day of Saint Aloysius Gonzaga. I think one of the great first names among all the saints. That we definitely do not have enough Aloysiuses out there. I was reading a little bit about him. You know, the only thing I know about Aloysius Gonzaga before I started reading yesterday, I knew he was a Jesuit. And I knew there was a university named for him, of course, up in the Pacific Northwest, really known for their basketball prowess, for sure. But St. Aloysius Gonzaga, who, not unlike many of the saints, ended up having a different desire in their life than their parents desired for them. You know, not that their parents were bad. Their parents just wanted them to be good Catholics, I think, but not the kind of Catholics who actually give up a promising career in order to be all in as a missionary or as a avowed religious or whatever the case may be. And you had that kind of experience with St. Aloysius Gonzaga. He was born to an aristocratic family there in Italy, there in the late 1500s. Actually, it was around the time, you know, the very early decades of the Jesuit order, founded, of course, by St. Ignatius of Loyola, not long after the throes of the Protestant Reformation. He was evidently the oldest of seven children, and he was born at his family's castle. So you know what, you're blue blood if you are born in a castle. As the story goes, as the firstborn son, he was in line to inherit his father's title of Marquis. And his father assumed that Aloysius would become a soldier, as the family was constantly involved in the frequent minor wars in the region. His military training started in an early age. He also received an education in languages and the arts. At the age of five, he was sent to a military camp to get started in his career. Wow. His father was pleased to see his son marching around camp at the head of a platoon of soldiers. So he grew up amid the violence and brutality of Renaissance Italy. He witnessed the murder of two of his brothers. But interestingly enough, when he was about 8 years old, I mean, you think about how much water had gone under this guy's bridge at such an early age. While he was about eight, he fell ill with a disease of the kidneys, which would trouble him throughout his life. And while he was ill, he took the opportunity to read about the saints and to spend much of his time in prayer. In that sense, St. Aloysius Gonzaga's life paralleled in many ways the life of the founder of the Jesuits, St. Ignatius of Loyola, who himself was an accomplished soldier in Spain before his injury, and during his recuperation, he encountered the saints. He's said to have taken a private vow of chastity at the age of nine. Well, he would go on, of course, to enter the Jesuit order. He died at the age of 23, caring for the sick in Rome. And, of course, went on to be named a saint. Saint Aloysius Gonzaga, pray for us. Now, the interesting thing, you know, I was that name Aloysius, like I said, you don't hear it a lot. Though, believe it or not, that's actually Pope Emeritus Benedict's middle name. It's Joseph. Well, so a version of Aloysius, Alois. It's Joseph Alois Ratzinger. But, you know, I believe when you say St. Aloysius, you're pretty much thinking of St. Aloysius Gonzaga. And what occurred to me yesterday thinking about this is, you know, there's a first time for everything when it comes to names and sainthood. I used to jokingly say when our youngest daughter was born, Zoe, who's our only cradle Catholic in the family, she was baptized as a newborn the day we entered the Catholic Church back in 2005. She'll be 11 here in about 3 weeks. But I remember someone asked me, "Oh, Zoe, is that a saint name?" And I said something like, "Not yet." Meaning hopeful, you know, maybe my Zoe will be. Well, in the meantime, I've discovered there actually was a Saint Zoe, so she won't be the first. But the point is still valid in that there's a first time for everything. We, no matter your name, no matter your state in life, God's desire is to make you a saint. His desire is to make me a saint. His desire is to make our children saints. Now, as we said last week, sainthood may not always be publicly proclaimed. We may not always be canonized. But the truth is, we won't be in heaven without being saints. To be a saint simply means you've been made perfect in love. Your soul has been made fit by God's grace to and our cooperation to share in the joys of this heavenly communion of love for all eternity. And so God's desire for all of us, we have to cooperate with His will in our life, but ultimately it's by its grace, God's grace to carry us. And there's no guarantees. That's just why we have to be diligent. And we'll talk about this next hour, the things that can threaten us on this path that becomes increasingly more narrow, as Jesus himself said. But St. Aloysius, the first Aloysius to be a saint, there's a first time for everything. Now, unfortunately, Adolf Hitler's father, who was quite the scoundrel, evidently, was also named Alois, just like Joseph Ratzinger's middle name. So there's a lot in a name, but there's not everything in a name. We've got to let God do his work. So we'll be back in a minute with the question of the day. St. Aloysius Gonzaga, pray for us and pray for our openness to the grace of God. This is the Mike Allen Show. This is Breadbox Media. Minutes past the hour. You're back on the Mike Allen Show on this Tuesday, June 21st. Love to hear from you today. I'm asking a question of the day about an interesting story, actually a study that was done out of the University of Texas at Austin that found that the United States, of all these 22 countries that were studied, had a larger so-called happiness gap. Self-reported happiness gap between parents and non-parents. In other words, they were trying to determine what's the level of difference between non-parents happiness and parents. But the idea being that oftentimes in these surveys, there's a gap that non-parents, those who don't have to actually do the work of raising children, report a higher level of happiness than parents who, other than those who choose to be parents. And in the U.S., in many countries, there's very little gap at all between non-parents and parents. But in the U.S., that gap is wider. And in fact, the U.S. ranks 22nd, according to this study, of the 22 countries that were looked at in terms of this happiness gap. It has the largest happiness gap of non-parents over parents. And this being reported, like I said, out of the University of Texas at Austin, an article here in Fusion by Taryn Hillen. She said, over the past few years, more and more couples have begun to speak publicly about their decision not to have children and the joy this lifestyle has brought them. Who needs kids, they explain, when their lives are wonderful as they are. They will likely be glad to know, Ms. Hillen writes, that a new report from the Council on Contemporary Families has found that people in the U.S. without kids are, in fact, notably happier than those with kids. For the report, researchers looked at happiness levels among parents versus non-parents in 22 different Western countries and found staggering differences. Now, you may immediately say, okay, well, who's to say different cultures don't define happiness differently or rate happiness differently and so forth? Well, that may well be true, but even if Americans, for example, seem to be a happier people overall than, say, the French. Not to foster stereotypes of the French, but that's in a sense moot because the issue of the parenting happiness gap is the difference between self-reporting happiness within each culture. So you would think, therefore, that it's about comparative within the culture, not comparing different cultures. So, for example, in countries like Norway and Hungary, parents were in fact happier than non-parents. Similar results seen in Portugal, Spain, and Sweden, which led researchers to believe that the parental happiness penalty, or they called it, in other words, giving up some happiness to be a parent, isn't necessarily about having kids, it's about where you have them. And according to Jennifer Glass, a sociology professor at the University of Texas at Austin and co-author of the study, the bad news is that of the 22 countries we studied, the U.S. has the largest happiness shortfall. In this country, the happiness level of parents is 10% lower than that of non-parents. So the researchers looked at various things, including family size, population size, number of unexpected births, and wealth. But according to the data, none of these factors contributed significantly to the happiness gap. Next, they looked into the time, money, and energy it takes to raise a child in different countries. And to do this, they dove into government policy issues, such as duration and generosity of paid parental leave, the average cost of childcare, and work schedule flexibility. And then they used that data to differentiate countries with good parental policy packages from countries with weak parental policy packages. And they also controlled for the gross domestic product to make sure that parental happiness wasn't occurring simply because parents lived in a richer country. And according to their study, what they assert is that these social policies, these parental leave policies, were hugely influential, more so than various other things, family size, level of wealth, and so forth. What Glass said, the researcher, what we found was astonishing. Quote, the negative effects of parenthood on happiness were entirely explained by the presence or absence of social policies allowing parents to better combine paid work with family obligations. And this was true for both mothers and fathers. So my question for you is, do you agree with this assertion? Do you agree that the happiness gap would be closed, that parents would be happier in the U.S. in comparison to their non-parent peers if we had better family leave policies? Whether that's family leave policies chosen and offered by companies on their own initiative, or whether it is put in place by some sort of governmental policy. Would better family leave policies increase parental happiness? That's my question of the day. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. Or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. Larissa commenting on Facebook says, I'm personally frustrated that maternity leave at my place of employment is totally unpaid, doesn't seem very pro-woman, pro-child, or pro-family. Now, here's the irony, Larissa, I would say, on that question, too, is that oftentimes it's where we get into this whole issue of partisan politics, the American political landscape, and why it's so difficult to find yourself, I think, as somebody with a Catholic worldview, at home fully in either party. I mean, we know profoundly from a Catholic perspective the issues of concern with the Democrats, particularly on the issues related to abortion, secularism, and so forth. But we oftentimes overlook the problems on the right, which are also manifold. And many. And part of, I think, the problem here is that oftentimes it's the very party that asserts itself as pro-life and wants a pro-life vote, the Republican Party, that oftentimes tends to undermine that deeper pro-life vision in a culture. Because to be pro-life certainly is to believe in the sanctity of human life from conception all the way to natural death, and sees any sort of legal approval of abortion as a legal approval of really the destruction of human life from the very beginning. The taking of an innocent human life is always and everywhere an intrinsic moral evil. And yet there are also things that can be done broader in the culture to create a and to till the soil that it will be more welcoming to life. And some of that comes with economic policies, labor policies that actually encourage having children. And oftentimes, unfortunately, the Republican Party seems to be held sway by this almost utilitarian view of the economy and the human person, this sort of Ayn Randian view that about self-sufficiency and not really looking at the greater good, things like a living wage, a family wage, and so forth. And this is another example of those. So it's very unfortunate. So that's a question. You may disagree with the premise that greater family leave, parental leave, will increase parental happiness. But I want to hear your argument for or against. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Okay, they're still celebrating in Cleveland, of course. Father Damian Ferentz, who was with us yesterday, still on cloud nine, I'm sure, as all the Clevelanders. Now the attention is focusing on who is the new the city of sports depression. What is now the city that's waiting the longest for a title? And there have been some different proposals thrown out there, including Washington, D.C., for example. I guess you could say just up the road from us, about 75 miles north from where we broadcast from in Lexington, Kentucky, Cincinnati would probably be in the running. It's been now, 26 years since the Cincinnati Reds won a World Series. And, of course, the Bengals they haven't been to the Super Bowl since then either. Of course, there is no NBA franchise in Cincinnati. Another thing being looked at is 538 with a story, is the Stephen Curry revolution over already? Stephen Curry, who certainly if you listen to this program, I've talked about him ad nauseum over the course of this season, had his coach on a few times from college, Coach Bob McKillop of Davidson. As I told you, I there's so much to love about Stephen Curry and the way he plays the game. But I do think questions are being raised after his NBA Finals performance. Was it because of injury? And he's talked about having surgery in the offseason. Was he not 100%? Or has the Stephen Curry riddle, the Splash Brothers riddle, been solved? Because, I mean, if you look throughout this series with the Cavaliers, the Splash Brothers were largely ineffective. And I think it's raising a lot of questions about the future there. And I guess they'll only be answered next year, particularly in the way they close the season after such a remarkable regular season. And as they're learning, as my UK Wildcats learned 2 years ago, is that a record-setting regular season is quickly forgotten if you don't bring home the title. Other big sports news, of course, U.S. versus Argentina tonight in the America Cup. We'll be back in just a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media. Right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show on this June 21st. I guess the first official day of summer, or was it yesterday? I don't know. I'm not a meteorologist, nor do I play one on TV. Anyway, my question today, we talked about this study showing a larger parental happiness gap between parents and non-parents here in the U.S. than in 21 other countries, with, by the way, happiness being self-reported. But there being a gap in terms of non-parents actually coming out happier than parents. Now, you might sort of cynically say, oh, well, yeah, of course. I mean, parenthood is a sacrifice. You sacrifice sort of the immediate rewards, you know, of having control over your own time and schedule, the financial costs that are involved, all those sorts. You make a short-term sacrifice of how we perceive happiness for the greater good. But, you know, and so that's kind of your mindset. But which I understand, but evidently in some other countries, that's not the case. Some other countries, there is no happiness gap. If anything, parents and some actually come out happier than non-parents. So my question of the day is, do you agree with the premise of the article that better parental leave policies, either initiated and instituted by businesses themselves or imposed through government regulation, do you think that would increase parental happiness? 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Or you can also post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. Got a couple comments there that I'll share a little bit later. We want to move on. We're a little bit behind. We've got some What Were You Thinking awards from the day spanning the globe. As we say, go dumb or go home. And there always seems to be no shortage of these types of stories. For example, in St. John's, Newfoundland, it's just goes to show this is not just an American deal. This is a human reality. It's a crisis of intelligence. St. John's, Newfoundland, an upset Newfoundlander, well, that's a mouthful, called 911 to report her pizza didn't have enough cheese, police say. Constable Jeff Higdon said they took the call Friday from someone in the St. John's area. The individual had an issue with the company she bought the pizza from, and there wasn't enough cheese. And she had approached the company and didn't like whatever response they had given. She said, I'm not sure if calling us, they assumed there was some sort of action we could take or what the situation was. But of course, we advised the individual they just needed to speak with the manager of the company and not with police. Oh, mercy. Not enough cheese on her pizza. Okay. How about secondly, we've got a man caught shoplifting with an incredible amount of meat in his pants. This guy, if you can actually see the film of when he's being stopped, apprehended by the store's authorities, and after first denying it, he had the major, you know, sag going, you know, pants on the ground, looking like a fool with your pants on the ground. This was so eloquently sung at an episode of American Idol a few years ago. Anyway, the guy pulled out, I think, three racks of ribs, a pack of steaks. I mean, it was unbelievable. You know, so you got to think, okay, if you're going to try to pull this off, dude, I understand no one's going to question you on the sag look, but I mean, what are you feeding at an army of Wolverines? I mean, seriously. How about one rack of ribs? Anyway, but we've got a winner that even tops those two. Again, go big or go home. Go dumb or go home, I guess. Anyway, this in the Pasadena Star News. Armed jaywalker arrested in Pasadena. Police arrested a Norwalk man early Saturday on suspicion of gun possession by a convicted felon after he jaywalked in front of a police car. Again, and we see these stories all the time, it seems like. You are a convicted felon. You are doing something you're not supposed to do. You're carrying a gun with you. And you, therefore, should do as little as possible out in society to draw attention to yourself. But instead, you jaywalk in front of a police officer. Not bright. We're always looking for your nominees if you've got one to send our way. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. We always like them from, you know, your own life experience and stories, too. Those are always fun. let's see, 5734 Bread 4. Ethan says he'd forgotten about General Larry Platt. Yeah, that the writer and performer of Pants on the Ground. You ever want to kill, 30 minutes, just go on and look up some old American Idol auditions. Those never fail to bring a laugh, that's for sure. Which, of course, they know, right? They picked out some of the more ridiculous ones just for the entertainment value. All right, so let's look back in history as well. Let's see some other things that happened on this day, January 21st. 1963, 53 years ago, Cardinal Giovanni Battista Montini was chosen to succeed the late Pope John the 23rd as the Bishop of Rome. He took the name Paul VI. He's now known as Blessed Paul VI. So he presided over the rest of the Second Vatican Council that was convened by Saint John the 23rd. And Paul VI, of course, probably best known for his encyclical Humanae Vitae on human life, in which he upheld and deepened the Church's understanding of openness to life and her opposition to sterilization and contraception. Also wrote, Evangelii Nuntiandi, about evangelization in the modern world. In 1964, three civil rights workers disappeared in Philadelphia, Mississippi. Their bodies were found buried in an earthen dam 6 weeks later. And believe it or not, on this very day, in 2005, 41 years later, Edgar Ray Killen, an 80-year-old former Klansman, was found guilty of manslaughter in their deaths. 1964, Jim Bunning of the Philadelphia Phillies pitched a perfect game. This was before he became Senator Bunning, in a 6-0 victory over the New York Mets. Chris Pratt's birthday today. My daughters will be happy. They have a little bit of a Chris Pratt crush. 37 years old. In 1982, Prince William born on this day. So Prince William, you may be 34 years old, but I don't know if you've seen that clip. The Queen, Queen Elizabeth, all 90 years old ever, dressing him down publicly, recently caught on video, telling him to stand up at a particular time at a royal occasion, I guess, out of respect. Anyway, on this day in 1985, scientists announced that the skeletal remains exhumed in Brazil were those of Nazi war criminal Joseph Mengele, the evil doctor who experimented on human beings, live human beings. Horrible. That's one of those stories where you had to trust perfect justice to be in the hands of God, because if someone like Mengele escaped, did not face consequences on this side of the veil, that there's got to be some sort of consequences if justice is to be served, for sure. Anyway, so that's what happened on this day in history throughout the ages. Oh, yeah, a year ago, Jordan Spieth won the U.S. Open, too. And what's happened to Jordan Spieth? He's found, you want evidence of how difficult a game golf is and how quickly you can sort of lose it? Not that Jordan Spieth has lost it. I mean, he's still competitive. But this time last year, I mean, the guy was on top of the world and not only won the first two majors, but was right there to win a third. And this year, he's really not been in real contention in either one. Of course, he's only, 22 years old, so we'll cut the guy a little bit of break. Anyway, back to the Pope. We were talking about on this day in 1963, Pope Paul VI succeeded Pope John the 23rd. Let's talk about Pope Francis for just a minute. I want to touch again a little bit on what we discussed yesterday, some of the controversy right now associated with Pope Francis, particularly from those in the Catholic Church who have been sort of steadily critical of the Pope. His most recent comment that has brought about their wrath was his comment at a conference in Rome that the majority of marriages today, I think he even said sacramental marriages, are not valid because couples enter into them without really fully knowing what they're entering into, with a lack of understanding of the true permanence of marriage, so deeply influenced by the culture in which we live. As I said, sort of the idea that we're all drinking from the same tainted waters and whereas there may have been a time in Western civilization that that societal views of marriage largely buttressed and supported the Catholic idea of the permanence of marriage and the openness of life. That is not the case anymore. And in fact, many ideas in the culture actively work against a Catholic vision of marriage as a permanent, exclusive, indissoluble union that is open to life. And so Pope Francis saying, because of that, there are a lot of invalid marriages, people who did not make proper consent because they did not properly understand what they were getting themselves into. When we come back for the break, I want to tell you that these critics of Pope Francis need to make up their minds, because there's a sense in which he can't win for losing. We'll be back in just a minute on Breadbox Media. This is the Mike Allen Show. Before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show on this Tuesday, June 21st. Again, my question of the day, there was a recent study out of the University of Texas at Austin that discovered that the parental happiness gap, the gap between non-parents and parents, was remarkably high in the U.S. comparatively. In other words, out of the 22 countries studied, most of these first world countries, I think all of them were actually, the U.S. ranked dead last in terms of the shortfall of parents to non-parents in terms of happiness. In other words, there were some countries in which parents, in terms of self-reporting, actually reported a higher level of happiness than non-parents did. But in the U.S., it was just the opposite. And in fact, there was the largest gap in the U.S. In which parents seemed to be less happy than non-parents. And this study sought to understand why. They looked at various factors, including family size, wealth, and so forth. And what they kept coming back to was the issue of parental leave policies, on those things that are in place, I guess, either through government regulation or through corporate decision to allow parents time off after a newborn to be able to be there for the child and to enjoy a little bit of time away. But my friend Brad commenting, he says, my company recently extended paternity leave, that's a with a P, paternity leave from 2 weeks, which I enjoyed with baby number three, to 6 weeks, which I just enjoyed with baby number four. This is company provided as a benefit, not a governmental benefit. Couple of thoughts, he said. I do think a math case can be made for governments potentially providing this. More moms and dads home with babies equal more nursing babies, less sickness of baby later from nursing, promoting equality of parental roles. One of the speculative drivers of the wage gap between men and women is women's exit, temporarily even, from the workplace during child-rearing years. This somewhat respects the role of both. As he says here, ancillary arguments could be made. This could even be made a pro-life issue. More government support for mom, dads coming home equal less need for abortion, question mark. Absolutely, yes, I agree with you on that, Brad. This can be a pro-life issue because we want to do whatever we can do within the culture. And this is not some sort of liberal idea. This has been a part, before really the Industrial Revolution, there was an understanding of family wage and of doing things within the culture, I think, that were conducive to family life. But we've come to this view that to consider governmental policies or corporate policies that actually try to think about things like a family wage or doing things like parental leave, that those are somehow liberal ideas that will frustrate the sheer capitalistic equation of profit and loss. And, you know, part of the reason sometimes I think the government has to get involved, and this has historically been the case, is because corporate America does not always do a good job of policing itself or taking the initiative on these things. Kudos to Brad's company that has done this and recognizes this. But if I think we look even at a broader scale, even if the U.S. government or corporations just take a completely utilitarian perspective, a democratic society without a healthy family life will not be a democratic society for long. They just won't. Because a democratic society depends upon the inculcation of virtue within a free society at the most foundational of levels. And we who are pro-life on the abortion issue, we who extol the virtues and the sanctity of human life from conception to natural death, which is not simply a faith perspective, it's a scientific perspective, but yet at the same time, we oftentimes undermine factors in the culture, economic issues that could assist, practically speaking, in making society more conducive to welcoming children into the world. Schuller goes on to say, my friend Brad, there are plenty of problems with this article. This is the article that I posted from Fusion. There are those parents that are wonderfully content with no leave time. So the idea this fixes everything is false. There are potentially other issues just at the heart of what it means to be happy and content as a married couple having kids. But how we measure happiness in America, I think, is altogether a little screwy. Well, you get no argument from me. Still, he writes, I do think a greater awareness of the need to support parenthood via leave for both parents is good. He said, I prefer it at the company level versus government. I agree with that, Brad. But sometimes I think companies are going to be completely bottom line focused, short term bottom line, as we've talked about, because there could be actually long term benefit for the company for making this decision. I don't think Brad's company would be doing it if they didn't feel like there was. Anyway, but he wouldn't be opposed to government involvement as it is appropriate when we're truly discussing the societal greater good. So what do you think about that? You agree with this? You agree that we need better parental leave policies? 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. Or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. We'll get into some other comments a little bit later in the program. But as I said, 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to chime in on this. We were talking toward the end of the last segment about Pope Francis stirring up controversy. Imagine that, with some comments that he made about the modern marriages and how so many of them, he says, are probably invalid because couples living in this world we live in and the culture that we live in that affects us. As I've said, it's like a fish doesn't know it's wet. We don't recognize the ways that our culture inculcates in us views of marriage that are not compatible with a Catholic vision of total self-giving that is permanent and exclusive and indissoluble and open to life. And so he making the suggestion, and then his comments later edited from within the Vatican, whether at his direction, we don't know, that some marriages were invalid. It's been kind of the controversy du jour with His Holiness. But here's the thing that occurred to me yesterday, because, of course, the criticism being leveled against the Pope is that he is somehow giving license to people to walk away from marriage, that they're going to take his comments, as if people are paying that close of attention anyway, but they're going to take his comments and they're going to say, well, if the Pope doesn't think our marriage is valid, then we have no business trying to work on it or to save it. And therefore, you know, let's get an easy declaration of nullity, easy peasy lemon squeezy, which if you think the declaration of nullity process is easy, there's a few people I can give you their phone numbers and you can call them who've expressed their frustration to me about the lack of ease of it. But I digress. Anyway, they're going to use his comments as some sort of an excuse to bail on marriage. Others say, well, the Pope is, he is minimizing the innate human capacity to marry. And this is the argument, of course, that marriage is not just a Catholic thing. It's not even just a religious thing. That marriage is a human reality that everybody can recognize at some level. And there is an innate human capacity, marriage being wired into us at our most foundational human level from the very beginning. There is an innate human capacity to marry. And we don't have to have, we don't have this incredibly high bar one has to reach to have a valid marriage. I understand that. But here's the thing that gets me, is people need to make up their minds about why they're critical of the Pope. Because think about it this way. The very same people who are criticizing Pope Francis for taking such a negative view of the cultural forces affecting marriage and how it's corrupting our common understanding of marriage because of a culture that has lost its way on marriage are oftentimes the very same people who criticize Pope Francis for being too optimistic and naive about modern culture. So which is it, I would say? And again, as I said yesterday, look, if you want to critique the prudence of what Pope Francis had to say, knock yourself out. That's fair game. You're not being a bad Catholic if you want to take issue with something. But the point, though, is this. It should always be done out of a spirit of great charity. And I think beginning with assuming the best about someone's intentions. Pope Francis is not the first prominent Catholic, and really not even the first pope, to say something like this. But it seems that there are those who are ready to pounce on anything this pope says. Granted, he said a lot. And there have been times that I have, oh, I wish you hadn't put it that way. That's fine. It's fair game. But make up your mind, seriously. Because you're either he's too optimistic and hopeful about the world we live in, too naive about the culture, or he's too negative about the culture and its impact. And, you know, Chesterton himself, G.K. Chesterton said, you know, if we criticize something for being too tall and too short, too fat and too thin, chances are it may actually be just right. Catholic faith is kind of like that, too. Anyway, more in the second hour. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.